The Exchange Daily Podcast is brought to you by
Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England. Now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. As the new year dawned, there was a round of celebration on the jobs front in the Granite State. Governor Hassan referenced the good news in her inaugural address.
Our unemployment rate is at its lowest level since 2008. Last month, New Hampshire's credit outlook was restored to stable, and our private sector has recovered all of the jobs lost in the recession.
State economists echoed the governor, but with some uncertainty about the nature of this new post-recession landscape. As one put it, we're back from where we were, but the economy looks different. Concern about wages has been a big part of that. Earlier in the recovery, most new jobs were on the low end of the pay scale, but more recently, that's been turning around. Meanwhile, looking ahead, state economists predict a patchwork of job growth over the next decade. The Department of Employment Security last week predicted robust increases in employment for three regions, the Seacoast, the Manchester area, and the Upper Valley, while the North Country and the Keene area were forecast to have the slowest growth. Today in The Exchange, we wrap up 3 days of looking behind economic headlines. This hour, what that new normal might look like for the New Hampshire economy. Give us a call. What's your economic story, and how different is it from before the recession? 1-800-892-6477 is our number, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. With us in studio is Bob Sanders, longtime reporter at the New Hampshire Business Review. And Bob, Happy New Year. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Great to be here.
Also with us, Dennis DeLay, economist at the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies, forecast manager for New Hampshire at the New England Economic Partnership. And Dennis, good to see you too. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Well, Bob, that was a quote from you in your recent story titled A New Normal. One of the analysts you quoted, Annetta Nilsson, said, "We're back from where we were, but the economy looks different." Let's just take that first part first. How are we back from where we were?
Well, in terms of a lot of statistics, and these statistics are real things, like people losing homes. They're basically not losing homes like they were during the recessions, back the pre-recession. People going bankrupt, losing their business, same thing. We're back to where we were. Number of jobs have increased. Homes are almost where they are in terms of the sales price. A little below, but it was pretty inflated anyhow. So I would say that was back to, quote, normal. So in a lot of ways, price of your home, chance at unemployment levels, and in terms of number of jobs, we really are where we were. And in real ways, not just statistical ways. But things have changed as well. And it's like we have the same numbers, but they represent different things.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I'd love to hear from you, too, on that, Dennis. We're where we were on those raw statistics, but it looks different.
It does look different. Well, again, you have to think that, the recession officially started in December of 2007. And here we are in January of 2014 and we're talking about having the same level of jobs that we had prior to coming into the recession. So it took 7 years through this economic cycle, a very sharp downturn, a very slow increase to get back to the same point, at least in terms of the total number of jobs. And you were right, as you said at the top of the hour, that early on in the recovery, the sectors that were adding employment were the low-paying sectors, leisure and hospitality, retail, trade. There's been a turnaround in that in the last year or so. We're starting to see more growth in the high-wage sectors. It used to be about two-thirds of the jobs that were being created, say, 2 years ago, were in the low-wage sectors, about a third in the high-wage sectors or higher-wage sectors.
So two-thirds in those lower-wage sectors. That's a lot.
That was in 2012. In 2013, it's about half and half. It's about half the jobs that have been created in 2013 compared to 2012 pay above average wage, half of them pay below. And the above average wage sectors are kind of interesting. We've seen growth in fabricated metals. Now, that may sound like old technology, but under the new economy, what fabricated metals usually means is very high precision components for aircraft and for other high-tech things. So those are companies like Hypertherm and Turbogen that have been expanding and adding jobs. We've seen growth in professional business services, in insurance, and in some of the higher-paying sectors in the healthcare sector. So, again, there's been that improvement. It's been a slow road back, but I think that the tide is shifting.
Well, and it's interesting because you and I have talked about this 100 times, Dennis. You've said you've been concerned about this growth in low-wage jobs. So mm-hmm. It seems like that's starting to turn around.
It is starting to turn around, I think.
What are you seeing, Bob?
Well, it's interesting the types of jobs. Manufacturing is not manufacturing anymore. It's kind of service to some degree because a lot of manufacturers, they don't sell goods. They sell solutions. And they, you hear this all the time. They don't just build a piece of equipment for your factory. They install it and run it, and then they work with the IT and so forth. This is one of the interesting things that's happening is that the lines between categories are changing so much. You see that with retail. We just did a story about Bauer Hockey. Which manufactures equipment. Well, now they're opening. They're acting like now they want to start up retail Apple stores. So rather than just sell their stuff through stores, they are becoming a retailer. You have retails. While I was driving in, they talked about the retail sales going down. Well, is that all retail sales? Does that include the online retail sales? Because that's a big percentage of retail nowadays. So the idea is retail the number of stores opening up, or is it the number of warehouses opening up, to ship all these goods? It's the whole things are blurring in terms of the economy. So that's one of the things is enabling people to figure out what's going on in the economy.
Wow. And this is a topic for a whole other show, but it does make me think, Bob, for people like you and Dennis who try to track the economy, mm-hmm. some of the ways that it's measured and labeled and, here's indicator X and here's indicator Y, it doesn't really fit anymore.
Yeah, things are always changing, though. I mean, I was looking back as part of a article I wrote for Business New Hampshire magazine for their 30th anniversary. They asked me to look back 30 years and what the economy looked like. And at the time, if you looked at service employment, the service sector, the non-manufacturing sector, healthcare wasn't even broken out as a separate category in a lot of the statistics. Now we keep talking about healthcare is such a big part of everything that we do. It's anywhere from 18 to 20% of total GDP, but 30 years ago, it was barely on the radar in terms of something that economists had to watch. So things do change over time.
That's interesting. Again, our phone number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Join us as we take a look at the New Hampshire economy, especially some recent good news on the jobs front. What's your economic story? How has it changed from before the recession? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter. One note of concern, Bob Sanders, even though we've been talking about how the jobs picture is looking a lot better, the long-term unemployed, how is their situation different?
Well, there's more of them as a percentage. I think it used to be about 10%, and it's now roughly half. So you have the same number of unemployed, but they're different types. The other thing is that the employed are different too. You have people who are employed, a lot of them are part-time. They may be working 30 hours a week, so they're sort of employed, but they're making less even though their wages are the same, hourly wages are the same. They're making less. It also means that when you get into the holiday season, if you have all these people who are now part-timers, 30 hours, you don't have to hire people for the holiday season. You just give them more hours. And that means that when during the holiday season, even when retail sales did go up, it wouldn't necessarily mean more jobs, and it didn't. The retail jobs did not go up compared to the holidays last year, even though sales went up. So it shows that a lot of the unemployed are not getting picked up.
So even though we have that very good low unemployment rate, like the eighth lowest in the country or something, among those unemployed, you're saying, Bob, there's more long-term unemployed, which has its own problems.
And you have people who have dropped out of looking, too.
I definitely want to ask Dennis about that as well in a minute. That's a big concern nationally, too. But here's an email that just came in from Amy and Keene, and I want to share it with you guys now because it relates exactly to what you just said, Bob. Amy says, great economy, ha. I have gotten two new jobs in December. Both are part-time, low hours, unbenefited. One replaces a woman who left. Her job was full-time with benefits. The job I was offered cut hours, benefits, and wages from when she held the job. Amy says, I am now working three part-time jobs trying to make up our household income after my husband lost his job. Wow, Amy, I'm so sorry to hear that. That's tough, Dennis.
Yeah, that is tough. And I was going to mention that one of the limiting factors on what Bob was just talking about is the Affordable Care Act. What you're starting to see is more employers are trying to limit the number of hours that part-time workers work, because if you go over a certain number of hours, essentially then you run into the employer mandate under the Affordable Care Act, and you essentially have to buy those employees' health insurance. So there's an incentive that we've created within the system to hire more people, but to hire more people to work fewer hours. You're starting to see that in a lot of other industries as well.
So as we talk about all the jobs have been regained, again, just from a pure numerical standpoint, does Amy and Keene count for three jobs?
Actually, Amy and Keene does count for three jobs under the way that employment's measured by place of work.
Wow. So you hear the headline, you say all the jobs lost in the recession, yeah, we've recovered. Yay, that's great news, but maybe not.
Well, again, you know, if you look at the data seems to suggest that you are seeing about half of the jobs right now are being created in high-wage occupations, so that's good news. But another half of the jobs are being created in the kind of things that Amy was talking about.
Okay, Amy, thank you for sharing your economic story, and we'll hear from you as well, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, who's faring well in the new Granite State economy and who's lagging behind? We wrap up 3 days of coverage looking behind some of the economic headlines here in the Granite State. Let's hear from you. Tell us your economic story and how is it different from before the recession? Call in 1-800-892-6477. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Send us email, like Amy did, exchange@nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Dennis DeLay is here, economist at the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies, along with Bob Sanders, longtime reporter at New Hampshire Business Review. And gentlemen, let's go to Exeter now, where Deborah's on the line. Hi, Deborah, go ahead.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We work in the arena of small business development and have for like the past four decades. There's an Intuit study in 2010-2011 that predicted that 40% of America's workforce would be self-employed by 2020. And this year, the numbers have already come out that 35% of the workforce are already self-employed, and they're moving it up to 50% by 2020. So if we've got 50% of America's workforce that are going to become freelancers, permalancers, self-employed, what are some of your experts seeing in terms of system support to help these individuals go from a paradigm shift to being employed for generations to now having to succeed in their own business?
And what kind of support do you think they need, Deborah?
Well, we're finding that the traditional business plan approach is to write the plan and then try to launch a venture is not as effective, that you first have to work with helping these individuals identify their strengths and then align who they are with what they want to do to make a living. And that seems to blend both the desire and the fit between skill and being able to succeed on their own. There are a lot more opportunities in the technology for these individuals right now, but I think there really needs to be more system support. We've got workforce development. We've got programs in vocational rehabilitation that are looking at some of this. But what are your experts starting to see? Are there any changes that are going toward helping this huge number of the workforce go from being employed to having to find their own work and create their own job?
Deborah, this is super interesting. Thank you so much for calling in. Dennis, she's right. A lot of people in New Hampshire work for themselves, and the yep. predictions are that that will go up.
Right. And again, what Deborah's talking about is not surprising. And it's been a shift that we've been seeing in the economy for a very long time. You know, companies, larger companies have difficulty, you know, shifting, turning the Titanic in the other direction sometimes. And so you often see smaller companies start to grow faster and become a bigger part of the economy. That's certainly true in New Hampshire. Small businesses, a larger share of the total businesses that we have out there than is true nationally. So I think support for that becomes a really important issue. But the advantage is, at least to overall economic growth, that smaller businesses and perhaps even the self-employed tend to move quicker and make changes quicker than larger organizations do. And, you know, on the net, you would expect to see productivity overall go up.
Yeah, it's tricky, though, because Deborah's right. You know, sometimes people have great ideas and they want to go out and do this,
right.
but maybe they don't have an expertise in a particular area, or they aren't able to afford health insurance or whatever.
That's true. I mean, another trend that we're seeing in the employment sector is that companies are putting a limit on their own growth. We're starting to see, companies that have about 50 or so employees, and if you go to them and ask them, what are you going to do when you double the size of your labor force? And they'll come back and the CEO of the small business will come back and say, well, we have no intention of doing that. We're very happy where we are right now. It's a good fit for us. So that's another limiting factor we're seeing on economic growth overall.
Yeah, I had a very interesting conversation with a friend of mine who started his own business 10 years ago. Now he's up to, 40, 50 employees. And I said, so what's next? And he said, I'm not sure.
No, he's
because
probably
there's a quality
happy
of life
where he
issue
is, right?
there. Yeah,
yeah,
Bob, go ahead.
Well, this is all the part of the whole outsourcing, too. That people are basically, they use consultants. They use self-employed contractors. They don't hire. And this is part of when we're talking about the missing workforce. This is part of where they're going. They're self-proprietorship. They're just and why should you go on to this workforce in a sense? It's changed. This workforce isn't what it was. It's not stable. You don't have control of your hours a lot of times. Benefits are much less than what you used to have. No pensions anymore. And there are alternatives. You do have the Affordable Care Act. You can get health insurance without having been tied on your workforce. Why would you go back to work when you can be self-employed or some people are using the system and getting some benefits rather than go back to work? If you're on the edge, the attractiveness of being in the workforce, the wages aren't what they were. It's just not there. People want people to come back to work. They're going to have to offer more.
Let's take another call. Andrew's in Dover. Hi, Andrew. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, everyone. I'm actually self-employed, and I wanted to call in and echo the earlier sentiment that there are some serious headwinds, at least in my opinion, in hiring full-time staff. Not just the Affordable Care Act, but I employed almost 50 people between New Hampshire and Massachusetts, and recently Massachusetts enacted the sick pay law, which mandates that we have to pay up to, I think it's a week's worth of sick pay for our employees. And it just feels to me like the burden on employers has increased dramatically over the past 4 years. And for me personally, it makes it very difficult to hire full-time staff. And we work in a high-wage industry. I'm in real estate management. And I wanted to hear some feedback about, how a business owner could go about enacting a change, either in legislation or through outreach. I'm having a heck of a time getting my voice heard as a smaller employer.
Yeah, and Andrew, thank you for calling in. And phone was a little difficult to hear there, but I think he was talking about it's some serious headwinds, as he put it, in terms of hiring new people, regulatory burdens, and yet he's in a high-wage industry. So, you know, presumably that would be good if he did hire some people. What do you think, Dennis?
Well, again, it's difficult, I think, for both whether you're on the employer side or the employee side to make that connection between somebody that has the kind of job that you're interested in and the kind of jobs that you have the skill set for. And I think we're always going to have this dance between, you know, what people think they want in terms of employment and fulfillment in their own lives in terms of their career and what employers are looking for when they need to hire people. I think you'll always see employers say that they can't find enough people at the wage that they want to pay them.
All right. Well, speaking of that, we're looking at the jobs now. But the Department of Employment Security recently predicted that a decade out, certain areas of the state will be hot, certain areas of the state will not, in terms of jobs growth. New Hampshire's Seacoast came out on top, followed closely by the Manchester area and the Upper Valley. Joining us now for more on that is NHPR's Seacoast reporter, Emily Corwin. And Emily, thanks for being with us.
Oh, hi. Yes.
So what did this recent report, Emily, say about the Seacoast specifically?
Well, the report from Employment Security, it was a forecast that showed that the Seacoast area, specifically the southern Seacoast, the region from Portsmouth to Salem, that this region will be adding jobs faster than anywhere else in the state. And that's a change from the previous 10-year forecast, which had put Manchester out front.
So the Seacoast is on top. What kind of economic projects do you see, Emily, just driving around and living on the Seacoast?
There's so much going on here in Portsmouth. Condominiums are going up all the time. There's a new conference center in Whole Foods that's coming in. New restaurants pop up every month or two. And the density at Pease is also growing really fast, which I think is a really good illustration of the job growth. They're actually approaching their intended daily capacity of 10,000 workers.
Wow.
I think they're at about 8,000. So, yeah, you definitely feel it here in Portsmouth.
Yeah, and of course, a lot of people know what Pease is, but some newcomers might not know the importance of Pease being filled up. Emily, just remind us.
Right. So, Pease was the Air Force base that got redeveloped into, a lot of sort of workplaces, even small manufacturing. So there's just a lot of jobs that are on Pease, and the number of workers is an illustration of how successful that redevelopment project has been.
Yeah, and good to see, because I remember when Pease was shutting down as a military facility, and there was a lot of fear about what that would mean for the Seacoast economy. It's good to hear that those fears have not come true. How about Seacoast local governments, Emily, in terms of, you know, capitalizing on this potential for growth over the next 10 years, whether it's housing or better roads or a better bus system? What are sort of community leaders saying they're going to need to do?
Yeah, so here in Portsmouth, they're in the process, the city's in the process of writing their next 10-year plan, and anticipating job growth is a really big part of that. Housing stock is really limited here, and so although building workforce housing is talked about frequently, I think what's really happening is that Portsmouth employees are moving out to cities like Dover, Somersworth, Rochester for cheaper housing. And, you know, businesses then, they complain that having to have their employees travel to work, especially like retail-type employees, it's hard to retain them. So I think the city is spending a lot of time thinking about improving transportation systems, creating more parking spaces, making that commute easier.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of the workers, Emily, the jobs may be there over the next decade, but what about the workers? Will the Seacoast be able to attract the right people to fill all these new jobs?
Yeah, businesses on the Seacoast, actually businesses all over the state, are voicing concern about getting access to the skilled workforce. There's a marketing firm here in Portsmouth called Vital Design that has just grown exponentially in the last 3 years. They went from 10 employees for like the first 10 years to like 36 in the last three. And so most of these folks are in Portsmouth, but they, you know, the Zach Bragg, who owns the company, mentioned to me that he had to open an office in Boston for the, you know, very skilled employees that he just couldn't get access to here in New Hampshire. So I think a lot of businesses are hoping that the university system, the partnerships with the community colleges are going to respond to that problem by delivering a more skilled workforce. But it's a concern. I know Dennis DeLay is there. It's a concern. Dennis has mentioned that he sees as a possible limiting factor on growth, job growth here.
Yeah, that's definitely something policymakers don't want to hear, that somebody was looking to expand and built that new satellite office in Boston instead of in New Hampshire. One last question for you, Emily, please. Predictions of robust job growth are often represented, including us here today, as great news. Is anybody in the Seacoast talking about the downside of robust growth over the next decade there?
Yeah, I think in most places that job growth is just you know, 100% good news. It's funny here in Portsmouth, there's so much concern about the nature of Portsmouth changing, that it's turned from a bohemian place to a very boutique place, maybe from quaint to becoming more commercial. I hear all the time people, you know, fearful that the cost of living has gone up so much that artists have been pushed out into places like Rawlinsford, and that low-margin businesses just can't afford to be in the downtown. So you see, you know, the sort of retail options here, the restaurants catering very much to sort of big pocketbooks. And, you know, there's parking problems. There are potential environmental impacts here on the edge of the Great Bay. So I think there's a lot to think about. But, you know, I think overall it's hard to complain about more jobs.
Okay, Emily, great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
That's NHPR Seacoast reporter Emily Corwin, again, talking about a new report projecting very hot growth in this Seacoast area over the next decade, along with Dennis DeLay, the Monadnock region, and also the Upper Valley. Now, the Upper Valley seems pretty easy to figure out. They've got Dartmouth, they've got the medical school, they've got the hospital, and so forth.
Yeah, there's about 2 million new square footage of industrial and commercial space going into the Upper Valley, in particular around the Hanover-Lebanon area, in the next 6 years or so, according to the planning agency up there. So that is a very vigorous area of the state. EdMed is the sort of education and medical technology are the drivers up there.
What about the Midwest area? That's interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of – and the other issue they have is because of that, there's a lot of flow, if you will, or churning in the housing market up there. You know, so people come in for a few years to do an internship, say, at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center, and then leave after a couple of years. So what they're seeing up in the Upper Valley is a real shortage of rental housing as opposed to ownership housing. The other area that, you know, in the study from Employment Security that's going to be a high-growth area, at least according to their projections, is the Greater Manchester area. So we're talking about the area primarily around the airport, even though the airport has seen a leveling off and even a slight decline in passenger ridership, mostly because of the expansion of Southwest into Boston. I think overall the prognosis for that part of the state is a fairly optimistic one. We have, you know, there's 1,000 acres and just south of the airport in Londonderry that's going to open up to economic development. So, you know, the next big thing, I think, after the Seacoast and the Upper Valley could be the Greater Manchester area.
Again, the phone number for you to join us here in the exchange with your own economic story, your own observations about the economy around you, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, we're looking at the economy right now as it stands in the new year, and especially at the jobs picture here in the Granite State. The jobs lost during the recession have been recovered, but as we're hearing, not the same type of jobs that they were. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to call. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, gentlemen, yesterday Anna in Peterborough sent us her economic story. And I apologize, this is long, so I can't read the whole thing, but I do want to share parts of it with you because it's really interesting. She says her husband has a BSEE and years of experience in software development. When he was working full-time as a contractor, he made 4 times more than I do now as an RN. But he's been mostly unemployed since 2001. He's had a few contracts since then that lasted 3 to 6 months or so, was never eligible for unemployment because he was a contract worker, or else his employment was too short. She says, as an RN, I am making a quarter of what my husband made when he was working full-time. The mortgage takes more than 50% of my monthly income for my full-time job. So I have a full-time job, a second agency job, works 2-3 nights a month. And she says, concludes by saying, nursing is one of the caring professions that are not valued in our society. And Anna, again, I'm sorry I couldn't read the whole thing, but Bob Sanders, this reminds me of what you said earlier about people doing contract work. And yes, it's great that they may have the freedom that they want, but it's tough, and they also may not be getting the money that they need.
Yeah, the type of jobs, it's not just the money and hourly rates. I mean, you a lot of times these contractors, they get per hour. They get a lot, but they just don't get the hours. And this is the same almost everywhere. Retail, the 9-to-5 jobs, those are that's part of the 80s or 70s or whenever that movie came out. It's just not what it was. And that's it's always people are piecing together jobs to make things ends meet, and it's enough if someone has an alternative. It's enough to throw up your hands and just leave the labor market. And that's what is happening.
That's what you were talking about earlier, Bob. I'd love to give you a little more time to talk about that. These are the sort of lost workers. They've dropped out.
Yes. There was a recent study that said that a number of the workforce has just simply percentage of the workforce that is participating is going down.
The labor participation.
Yes,
rate.
From the recession, it was going up, and now it's going down. That's one of the big changes to the recession. I think it just shook up the whole workforce. I mean, I don't think it's just a matter of, oh, we came back and we were where we were before. It shook up the whole society and the way people work. And that's what we're finding. And so it's different. We're not going back. This is the new way. That's what I think.
Well, and we've heard stories illustrating exactly what you talk about, Bob. Both our emailers, Anna in Peterborough and Amy in Keene. Speaking of the Monadnock region, coming up, we'll talk to someone from that region about the job forecast for that area. Not as good as the seacoast. We'll find out more. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at new economic realities in New Hampshire. The state has regained all the jobs lost in the Great Recession by the numbers. But as we're hearing, the jobs are not what they were. The economy looks different here in the Granite State, and we are no longer the New England leader that we used to be. We're finding out who's faring well and why, and who's been left behind. 1-800-892-6477 is our number for you to join us. Tell us your economic story. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, too, if you'd like. As I mentioned earlier, the New Hampshire Department of Employment Security recently came out with its 10-year prediction for job growth by region here in the Granite State. We heard earlier from NHPR's Emily Corwin about robust forecasts for the Seacoast. In the Monadnock region, the forecast was less robust. Joining us now is Priscilla Morrill. She's an editor at the Monadnock Ledger Transcript based in Peterborough. And Priscilla, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for including us.
Well, and as I said, we talked with Emily Corwin about the Seacoast a moment ago. Your area, along with the North Country, were predicted to have the slowest economic growth over the next decade, just 4.8% compared to, gosh, I think it was 10% or more on the Seacoast. I think it was up to 14%. What do you make of that, Priscilla?
Well, first, I guess I would say, the last to feel the recession is the last to recover. That's New Hampshire was slow to feel the recession to begin with. And I think this part of the state was even slower. But there's also, there's less hustle, there's less bustle here in the Monadnock region. And that's a lot of the reason why many of us chose to live here and stay here. And there's that tension between development and wanting to keep our rural character. And I think there's a lot of talk about, fashioning our identity around sort of what we want. And we do want businesses to come here. We do want, corporate headquarters to make the Monadnock region their home. We do want manufacturers to grow and expand. But we also want, to have no traffic and to not have any lines in the grocery store. And, you know, we want it both ways. And
yeah.
So we're working that out, I think.
Well, that's a really interesting point. And, you know, less hustle bustle, right? On the other hand, you do want some jobs. You don't want to be completely, you know, dead as a dormouse, so to speak.
Absolutely. And we want our downtown in, you know, all of our towns to be able to thrive. And, you know, so that means we want jobs right here where people can, you know, wake up in the morning, get their coffee, get to their job, and then take their lunch break, do their errands, and support, you know, downtown businesses. And where you have a lot of people actually commuting, you don't get that kind of traffic in your downtown.
Right. People are basically getting up and driving to work and coming home at, you know, 6 or 7 o'clock. Where are people commuting to from Peterborough? Is it Concord and Keene or Manchester or what?
I think it's Keene. I think it's Manchester. I think it's Nashua. Some people, you know, even, you know, work in Boston and, you know, maybe have an apartment or, you know, stay a night or two there and then come back. But people are also working from home.
Mm-hmm.
They're not leaving their houses in some cases, you know, because, you know, wherever their corporate headquarters are, they can just work from home. So, you know, especially, you know, this time of year when it's cold, people are not coming out as much.
Yeah, we were talking about that before the program, actually. We understand. Well, what kind of jobs are expanding in your part of the state, Priscilla?
We are seeing some growth among our manufacturers. New Hampshire Ball Bearing is looking at some growth. MicroSpec, which, you know, service creates products for the medical industry, they are growing hand over fist. And we're seeing construction come back slowly but surely here. We have, you know, a church being built in Peterborough. We had a elementary school built in New Ipswich not too long ago. We have, we're seeing, you know, even some residential projects coming up. And, of course, we have the solar array in Peterborough where you have construction happening. And we're hearing from construction companies that they are busy, even through the winter, or expecting to be so this spring. So that's good.
Doesn't sound too terrible. I do wonder, last question for you, Priscilla, what the reaction was there among community leaders, business leaders, to this jobs forecast, which again put three parts of the state at about 14% growth, jobs growth for the next decade, and you in the North Country at, you know, 4.8%. What was the reaction there? Did people say, no, or what did they say?
I think the Monadnock region is pretty tight community, and I think people said, well, let's look at everything. Let's look at our education. Let's look at how we're preparing people for the workforce. Let's look at what do young people want to be able, you know, to stay in this area, contribute to the workforce. And they are also reviving their, you know, economic councils and looking at it from every angle, I think. And there's this spirit, you know, among people who live here that says nothing is going to get us down. We're going to get through this, and we're going to get through this together. And I think people are really supporting the nonprofits in the Monadnock region, the River Center and the Shelter from Storm and Jaffrey. And
the ongoing efforts to revitalize those smaller downtowns.
I'm sorry?
The ongoing efforts to revitalize some of those cities or town centers.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And, but also wanting not to let anybody slip through the cracks. We have some entrepreneurs who are, you know, thinking about what can we do downtown. We had a building that had was selling stoves and fire, you know, fireplaces and pellet stoves and so forth, wood burning stoves downtown that closed, I don't know, a couple of years ago, and an entrepreneur came in and
rebuilt, made it a mixed-use building, and you've got housing on top, and you've got retail stores on the bottom. So,
I remember hearing about that. Yeah. So that's an opportunity that occurs. Priscilla, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Priscilla Morrill, she's an editor at the Monadnock Ledger Transcript based in Peterborough, talking about some of the job growth predictions for that area. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. In Portsmouth, Diane is on the air. Hi, Diane. And we lost Diane. Diane, I hope you call back. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You know, Dennis DeLay, I thought it was really interesting to hear Priscilla say, okay, maybe we don't have the hustle and bustle of the seacoast, right, as she put it. I love the way she put it. But also, you know, we don't want to have traffic, and we don't want to wait in line at the grocery store. And so people are sorting through this.
Yeah, well, I think Monadnock has always been a slower-growing region of New Hampshire. That's always been true. And it looks like, you know, that people, you know, again, according to what Priscilla was saying, people out there are in some ways pretty happy with that. You know, that's a good situation for them. You know, there are other measures that have been done in the past of social capital, you know, the cohesiveness of a community and community involvement. And Monadnock always ranks very high on those kinds of measures, a lot higher than other parts of the state and even other parts of the country. So, you know, there are some unique things, I think, about different areas of New Hampshire that are appropriate for those areas. In the Upper Valley, again, as we were talking about earlier, education and medical services are really driving a lot of growth. It's transportation largely related in business services in Manchester. I'll give you just some interesting statistics. Over the last 3 years, from 2010 to 2013, employment went up in every county in New Hampshire. But the breakdown is kind of interesting. Private sector employment increased in every county except Coos County. And government employment declined in every sector, in every county in New Hampshire, except for Coos County. So, you know, the nature of growth is different. You know, growth is fairly slow in the Cheshire County area, but at least it did increase, whereas you saw a decline in the private sector. Government sector employment has been dropping everywhere except for Coos County. And I think the reason for that is the opening up of the federal prison up there. So, you know, the nature of how our geographic areas are changing is something to keep an eye on.
Well, and gentlemen, just have about 5 minutes left, and I did want to switch gears from the sort of quaint towns of the Monadnock region to international trade, because that has a real impact on New Hampshire businesses, be they located in Peterborough or anywhere else. Bob Sanders, just make the connection for us.
Well, I actually, there's a nice segue there, because transportation and an ability to get your goods and services and people around is one of the reasons we have growth. And one of the secrets in the Manchester growth, or not so secret, is the airport, and not just passenger growth. You mentioned that was going down, but the trade is the ability to get your goods and people around in the airport attracts businesses to that area. Mm-hmm. And it's changing the whole area. I mean, I talked to one realtor there, and they're selling homes to first-time buyers. They're not finding your traditional first-time home buyer leaving the home or getting married and so forth and getting their first home, because a lot of people are not leaving their home. They're moving in with their – staying with their parents. They're revitalizing some of the house so that they can stay there. So they're selling them to people coming out of the country, Indians, Chinese, Mexicans, some extent, buying homes in this area. That's the first time home buyers. That has boosted the housing market in this area, and
in the Manchester area.
In the Manchester area, I don't know about the others, but that I've talked to some realtors about that, and they're saying, you know, the the home buyer, first-time home buyer is changing.
That's interesting. So as these international companies expand, they look at the Manchester area, they say this looks good, and they send folks to sort of ground their international business in Manchester.
Yeah. I mean, our second biggest trading partner right now is China. China, Taiwan, that whole area, Hong Kong. And I was recently over in China, and that place, I mean, they say it's slowing down, but it doesn't look like it's slowing down. It's slowing down for them. It would be for us. It would be
gangbusters,
booming.
Right?
Yeah, there's cranes, building cranes all over the cities. That I was in Shanghai and Beijing. We're not only exporting our goods to China, we're exporting our pollution to China. That place is you can barely breathe there. We were there during an economic conference, and they shut down the factories around Beijing for a week or so, and they had restrictions on driving. And people called it APEC Blue, APEC the name of the conference, because they could see the sky. Generally,
that's amazing. But
all those people are building stuff that they're shipping to the United States.
Yeah, that's what
and
I remember
other countries.
In Econ 101, I remember, Dennis, they call that externalities.
Externalities,
all that growth,
right.
But then they've got the pollution, too.
You know, we could have a whole separate show. I'm not setting your agenda for you, but on the foreign-born population in New Hampshire, I mean, I think there's been a lot of, you know, focus on, you know, the refugee population and the demand for services. But if – you know, as Bob was just saying earlier, there's also the foreign-born population also makes a significant contribution to the economy because a lot of those peoples are that come from other countries are, you know, highly educated and take high-wage jobs in computer and mathematical systems and healthcare. So if you look at the educational attainment of the foreign-born population in New Hampshire, yes, there's a high concentration of people without a high school degree even, but there's also a very high concentration of people with advanced degrees, including master's and doctorates and beyond.
Here's an interesting email that just came in from Tom in Troy. He says, I'd like to hear discussion about the growth of remote workers and the need for infrastructure, broadband, to support that. Tom says, I live in Troy, work remotely for a corporation in Arizona, and believe that New Hampshire has the perfect tax environment to promote more growth. I work from home, a 70-acre farm, no commute, no sales or income tax. It makes an attractive proposition, Tom says. He says, however, the availability of fast internet is the main restriction for more rural remote tech workers. This tags on to what somebody else talked about, an email or a call about more people working on their own remotely, and that's good in a way. It's entrepreneurship, but there's some challenges too. Go ahead, Dennis, your thoughts on Tom's comments. Thank you, Tom.
Again, Tom makes a very good point, and I think the broadband availability and even wireless availability in different parts of the state in some parts is not as good as it is or could be in places like Manchester and the seacoast. Overall, if you look at the national statistics, New Hampshire has probably one of the highest levels of broadband service among the states. And, you know, we're way ahead of places like in the Midwest and even to the Southwest. But still, I think that we've been looking at that as a state for quite a while now. There's been a couple of initiatives, one trying to look at communication hubs centered around the community college system, and then, you know, another certainly with the cable and the cable companies and the phone companies also trying to make a contribution to broadband too.
Well, here's an email from Lisa. She's a high tech leader, and I won't read the whole thing, Lisa, because I'm running out of time. But she says, possible that some of the lag of high skilled and high paying jobs is a direct result of the lack of educated, experienced, skilled workers in the marketplace. Lisa says, especially in New Hampshire, where the median salaries are much lower than even our entry-level jobs might be. As a leader, she says, I earn a six-figure salary per year, but probably work 70 to 80 hours a week. Because of the shortage of staff, she says, perhaps I could count as having two jobs also. Smile, Lisa says. Lisa, thank you so much. And that's probably fodder for another show, gentlemen, the whole link between education. I know that's a big focus here in the Granite State. It was good to see both of you. Thank you for your time. Bob Sanders, thank you for being here.
It's great to be here.
Bob Sanders, longtime reporter at New Hampshire Business Review. And Dennis DeLay, we'll talk to you more in the new year. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Laura.
Dennis DeLay, economist at the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer this week is David Darman. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producer is Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.